Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From Variety, celebrating 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. He thinks it's the most ambitious standalone superhero movie ever made. Would you agree with that?
Until Doctor Strange 2.
Ooh. Yeah. Academy Award nominee Benedict Cumberbatch is throwing down the gauntlet in 2021, and he's taken no prisoners in the process. I'm Clayton Davis. On this bonus edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talked to Cumberbatch about his roles in Jane Campion's The Power of the Dog and Will Sharpe's The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne, which both screened at this past weekend's Telluride Film Festival. He also discusses his return to Dr. Stephen Strange in the upcoming Spider-Man No Way Home opposite Tom Holland and his own Marvel standalone sequel, Dr. Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Talking with the guy with the best fans on social media, coming up next on the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close. Benedict Cumberbatch is having one hell of a year, starting it off with an acclaimed performance in Dominic Cook's The Courier, which he also executive produced. He also had two films that screened at this past weekend's Telluride Film Festival. One as the English artist in the whimsical biopic, The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne, and on the other side, a homosexually repressed cowboy in Jane Campion's The Power of the Dog. I spoke with Cumberbatch on the ground in Colorado. We talk about this time in his career, his experiences in the Hollywood industry, and he even manages to give some shade to his friend Tom Holland. But rest assured, it's all in the name of Marvel. Check out our interview.
Thanks for taking this time with me. Me and you have been best friends for a long time. You know, we understand each other and what's going on. Congratulations on having two movies here.
Thank you.
And just being a very busy guy this year. Four movies, and doesn't look like it's slowing down for you. So,
I mean, it's kind of a glut of stuff because of COVID, and that's the sort of phenomena we're entering now, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I did these films all quite separately, but first The Mauritanian and The Courier come out the same year. The Courier had a staggered release because of COVID, for example. That's a clear indication of that. It was supposed to be released much earlier. And the UK only just now came out. I'm still on the side of buses. It's gravel wind. And then, the double burst of these two films coming out pretty hot on each other's heels of The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne and then followed by The Power of the Dog. And to have both at Telluride is just... it's wonderful. It's just so wonderful. So also because they're utterly different worlds and different characters, and there's stuff that I've definitely learned from both of those experiences that is very, very similar in a weird way. But yeah, you couldn't have more different experiences as a viewer. I bumped into some people coming out of Louis Wayne this morning going, oh my God, we read The Power of the Dark last night and here are Louis Wayne. I was like, what? That's a lot of me in 24 hours. But they're so different. And I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, great. I mean, looking over your career, and you've been like, you know, we've seen you do a variety of different roles, and, you know, you're producing, you know, you have your own production company, and I feel like, and maybe I'm just reading into it, I feel like there's a Benedict Cumberbatch directorial thing coming. I feel like there's a hint of it, like we're going to see you one day jump behind the camera.
I'd love to do it. I think it'll have to be at a different stage of my private life when my kids are a little older. It's so all consuming. It's been something I've been wanting to do for a long time, though, definitely. We started talking about all these things happening at once. There have been some very nice gaps, which is the way I really like it. I have to be able to intensely focus on a project and then have some proper home time. And not miss a heartbeat of all the joy of that. The directorial thing is interesting. I have to switch my head off. It was very helpful being with Jane, although I tease her. I say, yeah, I'm really thrilled how quickly my credit comes up after yours, since I directed so much of your film. You know, because we had a wonderful collaboration, and there was a lot of collaboration, a lot of input from either side. And she's like, you've got to direct one day. You got to direct, which from her is something.
Ah.
And a lot of directors.
She gave you the blessing.
Sam Raimi just said it in a completely different context as well. He said, you should do it. You'd be great. I'd love the idea of bearing witness to an actor's process. And I'd never tire of watching, you know, in an edit. Maggie was saying this just now, Maggie, get in the hall, we could chat outside. I just could do it all day. It's so enjoyable. I agree. There's nothing better than watching good acting. And to help someone get there as well, I'd love to facilitate that. And also to all the rest of it, you know, the pacing, the mise-en-scène, the music, the soundscape, all of that. But chief amongst those experiences that I think I'm really looking forward to is just to be, you know, surrounded by good actors and trying to give them different ideas just so that they feel they've thrown it all out on the dance floor.
That's awesome. Oh, that's great. Because you're so busy, and I feel this as well. You can get your tea.
Listeners. This is a tea.
Breaking news headline.
He drinks hot beverages.
Yep. With a green tea, right?
Do you want to get that done?
Yeah. No, I'm good.
What's he wearing? Well, today, I'm drinking. No, it's a green tea. It is a green tea.
Yeah. I'm learning this part right now. Like, as I go, and listen, obviously I'm not an actor, but I'm going deeper into my career. And because I have kids, you know, as you do so well, you know, you're missing on those key moments that you want to be part of so bad because you're working. It's like, it's your art, it's your process. Do you find it difficult to kind of balance that out? Cause you've been working so much.
I've got a wonderful partner in crime there, Miss Sophie. So we're very clear about what our priorities are as well around family. And that is all I'll say about that. It's such a treasured thing for me to keep that private. But I will definitely speak to that. Yeah. I mean, it influences my choices massively now. People say, what do you, as if it's just, I'm just going to do anything I want. Mm-hmm. No, I do. I'd want to be with my family.
Yeah, because it
intensifies, but like lockdown as well, it kind of really intensifies how extraordinarily precious those moments of work are, and you find a new focus, really, a new economy and precision in your work. You don't waste your time. You really, really get down to it, and that's wonderful. I think it's good for creativity. I'd love to, but it just becomes an open season if I start talking.
Please.
You're a parent, it inspires you in ways you couldn't possibly have imagined.
Awesome. That's about Power of the Dog. So you're under the thumb of Miss Jane Campion with a cast that includes my 10-year-old girlfriend, Kirsten Dunst. When I was 10, I loved her. And then I waited for her for a long time, and she married Jesse Plemons, and I had to move on. So that was that. But no, you kept Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons.
Jesse, though.
Yeah, I love Jesse. She went for the next best thing. Like, I get it.
No, she's one of those girls that's grown up with a lot of people, and she's an American sweetheart. She really is. She's also, just every single time I see her, becoming a more fierce and fearless talent. She's just phenomenal. A really actress to be reckoned with. And she's incredible as Rose.
Mean to her in the movie. So mean.
You know, he has his reasons. We can get into the whys of it. And I think that's what's really explicitly extraordinary about that character, is despite how flagrantly misogynistic and torturous and confrontational, angry and bitter he is, there is a reason for it. He's being driven to these extremes by intense loneliness, intense anxiety about not being able to live his true life, seeing his brother couple up and him never having been able to do that. Also, the fact that he's built this thing with his brother for 25 years and it's going to go to that kid, really? Everything I've done? Mm-hmm. And it's compounding that is this fear that she is on the make, and it can, you know, he's blind to the fact that she's a kind person, that she's a good person, that she's not, it's not coming from her scheming, you know. And I think, you know, what keeps people interested until they discover more about Phil is the massive amount of vulnerability that's in all that anger and bad behavior.
Yeah. Without giving anything away for people who didn't see it because they haven't seen it yet. There is a person in the movie that you speak of often, Bronco Henry. We don't see him in the movie. Did you have a vision, or did you sketch out like who that was? I don't know if there was like a scene, because I think
I did. I mean, it was difficult sometimes to get an accurate fix on him visually, like, you know, just to really picture his face. Mm-hmm. But silhouettes or movements or shapes or sounds or smells, all those things, I look for sort of triggers and sensory devices to kind of stimulate that and think of that and be absorbed by the memory of him with those aids. And, you know, I would write letters to him, letters that I couldn't have written, and I also wrote as him to Phil. I would sit down with Jane and in character talk about him and remember him, and I'd ask my subconscious to dredge up some stuff that might give me some clue on him, or at least something that could go into the work based around what the kind of seismic impact of that character, who's so present and yet never there, in both the book or the film, and what he meant to film. So it was hugely important for his presence to be constant for me. And every now and again I get a fix of his face, but I think even people we know and love incredibly well, it's very strange the tricks that memory plays on you. And I used to beat myself up a bit about it, like I really wanted to kind of fix him. I told Jane that one time, I was like, after we'd done an exercise, I was like, I feel, see, his face is still a blur, and that's a problem. She went, no, you don't have to see, you know, whether he had a moustache or what his nose shape was. And you know, every now and again, there would be something that would come in, and there were pictorial references, and would be some identikit of all of that, the imaginings and the observed, you know. But yeah, it's a good question, and it something that meant a lot to try and understand and envisage.
A little off topic for a minute, but you and I were speaking earlier before the podcast that I need you back to host SNL before some time, because it was one of the best episodes.
Give the guys a call. 30 Rock, here I come. I'd love to do it. I would absolutely love to do it again. And there it is. I put it out there.
Yeah, all right. There you go. So right now, we have it. Yeah,
Michael's, if you're listening. It's I had a really good time. It was such a learning curve as well. I think second time around, I don't know, maybe it's like second album syndrome. Maybe there are more pitfalls, but in a way, I think at least you're prepared for what the... Because it's so much endurance. I mean, hats off to people that do it endlessly or just do it so effortlessly. It's really weirdly tough. It's enjoyable, but you're going on show at 11 o'clock, is it? I can't remember. It's really, really late. And then, you know, you might not have slept until like 5 a.m. because you do all the pre-records the night before and the day before. You know, some of those shoots, if they're night shoots, can go on literally until 5 a.m.
And then you're coming from...
And you've got to...
Yeah,
on press tours or whatever. So,
you heard it here. He's ready to go back whenever. I'm going to text Lauren. I'll let him know. As we look, you know, with The Electrical Life, Louis Wayne, and the Courier earlier in the year, and in comparison to Power of the Dog, all different performances. And I think that's what people imagine when I was asking the family question, is that they think, like, you just weren't home for, like, you know,
because they're all spaced out. It's just they're coming home to roost because theatres are opening again.
Yeah.
And they're being able to have their life, and especially The Courier, which is, you know, not going to be streamed yet, I think. I mean, I can't remember. I should know. I'm the producer on it, but I've gone completely blank. But, you know, certainly The Mauritanian, for example, that had a theatrical release before. Anything else? And it is. It's true. I had 2 years, which was pretty back-to-back. I really ended when we wrapped Strange, but then, you know, that was, what, May this year? Maybe April? I haven't done anything else since. I did some reshoots on Spider-Man. I'm going to do some reshoots on Strange. That's it. And I'm very happy to just be present, to hold this moment and cherish it and watch these films come out and champion them, because I'm super proud of them, whether it's producerially, as in the case of The Courier and The Electrical Life of Living Wayne, or being in front of camera in all four. You know, it's very, very rare that you have this breadth of challenges. The difference between them all coming out so fast on the back of one another. It's kind of an amazing thing.
And because you're a producer, I think I you would have a very interesting take on this. You're all your films are going to debut in theaters and then streaming platforms and all that. Yeah. And there is a way for all those things to coexist in Hollywood, yeah. in
well, the industry. You're giving the answer to the question. And I think we're in the middle of it already.
We're seeing that right now?
Two things happen. One is that the pandemic really sped up the ultimate reality that streaming services were going to have a much more prevalent position in how we consume culture. And thank God for that, in the sense of not being able to go to the theater. But I think also like live music, as opposed to, you know, digitalization of music and the streaming services, there's been a massive invigoration basically people are dying to see stuff live again.
Yeah.
And theatre for you is cinema, you know, for this culture. And I think for broad sweeps of Europe and the rest of the world as well. But particularly for you guys, your cinematic culture is your theatre. And you have great theatre as well, don't get me wrong, but it's like being an English audience member in an American audience is a profound education. You know, it's like watching a pantomime at Christmas. You're so involved and viscerally open in your reaction, the gasps, the laughs, the cheers, the claps, the boos. It's amazing. It feels like you're having a connection with the action as if it's being played out in front of you by actors on a stage. And it really hit me that when I first started coming over here to promote, say, the Marvel films, and how visceral the fan reaction is there. It's fantastic to hear that. It feels like being in the theatre, but weirdly you're sat in front of the proscenium arch watching yourself rather than being on stage. And I think like live music, there's a massive resurgence and hunger for that. And that's great. So now what we have to do is just make sure that the smaller, more eccentric, more quirky, but really profoundly influential picture houses survive. Mm-hmm. I think multiplexes are going to be all right. They might have to, you know, reduce volume a little. And God knows that I don't want to get into a crystal ball conversation about this, because we don't know what variants around the corner. We're all a variant away from this all being far more difficult than it is now. But I have to say, being at this festival and with the security of knowledge and it reduces your anxiety to know that people have been tested and have had vaccines, but mainly being tested, because that's the real proof that there isn't transmission going on, to have proximity to people and enjoy being connected to filmmakers and audience in such an intimate way that Telluride holds. And this is my first time in. I'm just blown away by the experience.
This is your first time here?
On top of, you know, the fact that we've been living through a pandemic of separating us and denying us that communal experience. It's really potent. I know lots of artists have talked about that, but it's the first time I've really experienced it is here. And yeah, it is my first time. I've had lots of films here, apparently. Not being here with them. About the invitation game was here. I didn't even know. I must have known, but I'd forgotten. And the one I did remember was 12 Years was here. 12 Years a Slave was here.
Do you feel like you were well prepared for the Marvel world?
By the way, I interrupted your question. Did you answer it?
Do you think you were well prepared for the Marvel, like, fandom world? Like, when you took on Doctor Strange, do you think you really knew what you were about to get into?
I mean, I'd done this little TV show called Sherlock, which had pretty kind of seismic ripple in the world. I mean, it was nuts. Even the Marvel people were like, it's okay, you will not need CP in Nepal. Cut to, you know, Durban Square not long after the earthquake, when we insisted on going there to, you know, show that culture that we hear you, we're with you, this place can operate as a location for a film shoot. But oh yeah, you do have televisions, you've always had televisions, and you've seen Sherlock. And they were blown away. I was like, it might get a bit dicey. So they, look, you're in this beard and people won't, and I went, they fucking will. Yeah. And when that starts to happen, and it was literally, there's one moment of being in a car and we were literally being rocked by the people in this alleyway who were around us, all benign, but just wanting to have a little look or a photo or just a chat or just a connection. And I had to get out of the car. Everyone was like, just stay in the car. And I was like, no, I had to get out of the car. They'll move. And they did. They were so polite and I was waving, and then we could actually get somewhere. You know, they were too excited to realize they were blocking the vehicle, but once I got out, they understood, and we went off. And by the end of shooting in Durban Square, it was like the Pope addressing an Easter crowd at the Vatican. It was nuts. The whole place was covered. I mean, it was wonderful. I mean, I was so grateful for it, to be able to be there. How else would I go to Nepal? It's, you know, to do that job was a great reason. And I was amazing. But going back to your question, yeah, that prepared me in a way.
But Sherlock, Sherlock prepared you for Marvel.
Well, in a way, the ownership, you know, the thing that the sort of trajectory, which is first of all, it's a Marvel. Let's call that a pun intended. This is great, and then the adoration of it, which becomes pretty intense, and then the obsession with it, which becomes sort of ownership, and then the disappointment, and then the reclaiming. On both parts, and the synergy and the conversation, which is sort of uneasy, but you know, you get to a point where it's like, okay, it's not quite where we thought we were going as a fan base, or we're loving where this is going as a fan base, you know. So I'd been on that journey a little bit already by the time, not fully. I think I had another series to go actually before or after Strange, the first one that is. It's a similar dynamic, but no, I mean, Krista, I was just talking earlier, and she was saying, you know, on the lawn, the first day I was here. Kind of wading through jet lag and altitude sickness and the thriller being this amazing setting and having two films to talk about and being on a panel and being a little bit hungover and very sleep deprived after a long flight and some celebration of Venice beforehand because we came from the Venice Film Festival to here in a heartbeat. There were just these sections. There were cineasts, there were Marvel fans and there were Sherlock fans and, you know, I'm sure there are people amongst all of those who like each and every one of those things, but they have their indistinct identity. So I don't want to tread on that at all for fear of losing my life. But there's also some synergy, I think, definitely. And look, man, I'm really glad to be at the table and invited to the party. You know, it's a rich, rich culture to belong to and to service an extraordinary character with a lot of potential. And I'm excited. I'm excited for them to see the next evolution in Spidey and the next Strange film. And, you know, it's a wonderful ride to be on. And I hope they enjoy coming along with me.
I have to ask, you may already touch on it. I have to ask. I know you can't say much about it because it's the way things work. But I wanted to know if you could just tell me the end of Spider-Man No Way From Home. I mean, just tell us, like, everything about it.
I can tell you the end of it. Yeah, I can.
Is it what happens at the end? But is there anything you can share about it? Any, like, little, like, fun stuff? Like, trailer looked great. And I don't like your disrespect for Benedict Wong, by the way. When he tells you to do something, you got to do it.
Tom is, in fact, not a gymnast. He is... he's actually, I don't know where I'm going with this. I can't even make stuff up about him. The guy's ridiculously talented. To talk about Tom, I can't really talk about what happens, obviously, but and where it goes. But, it's going to be a great film, I think. I think John Watts is a genius. All that team behind those three films are utterly brilliant. And, it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, there'll be a lot of debate about it, I'm sure, but, I mean... It's a daring, brilliant concept.
So let me ask you this. I interviewed Tom last year, and he said about it. He said he thinks it's the most ambitious standalone superhero movie ever made. Would you agree with that?
Until Doctor Strange 2.
Ooh. Comes along. Yeah.
Throw it down, Tom. Throw it down. For now, it'll do.
Yeah.
It'll do.
Yeah, I mean, because that's like 5 months apart.
What's that?
When does Doctor Strange 2 come out again?
Not long after. I mean, I think at the moment it's March. I mean,
March,
like I said, who knows because of everything.
So for 4 months he can hold the title. That's okay.
Yeah, he can hold it for a bit.
Yeah, that's good.
Just a little bit. No, seriously, it has got great ambition. And I think I haven't seen it, but by all accounts, I think it's achieved it. Even on paper, the audacity was like, how the hell is that going to work? But also so excited at even the opportunity of them exploring those ideas. So yeah, I'll be really interested to see how it comes out. Cool. But I'm pretty certain it'll be a hit because, like I said, John's great. He's got such a light touch. He's so assured, though. He's great to hang out with on set. He's a real cineast. He's very witty, but incredibly generous and supportive. Everything you want in a director. And he's young. He's energetic. He gets the kids, and I call myself an older person to the older people. and he, you know. It's an atmosphere on that set. It's a bonded group as well. They've done three of them now, and beautiful working environment. I really, really enjoyed being on that set. Really did.
My last question for you, because I love film. I know you love film. What do you recall the movie that did it for you? The movie that punched you in the stomach and said, "Go be an actor."
Oh, well, that's Benedict Cumberbatch. The most immediate go-to movie for me, not, and this doesn't answer your question exactly, but like a punch in the gut moment for me was watching 2001 Space Odyssey for the first time. And with a brilliant director called Andrew Birkin, who'd worked as like a T-boy on it, but had ended up doing some of the second unit stuff over the landscape that was then decoloured for the whole sort of rebirth Dawn of Man sequence in the end. Not Dawn of Man, the end sequence, the what was it called? I can't even remember now. I wrote a dissertation about this and I can't remember. It was a while ago. That amazing psychedelic sequence where the consciousness of the conscience of man is evolved, the doors of perception moment. And to have both the experience of watching the film, but then the discussion of it afterwards and realizing how profound the philosophy of a piece of entertainment can be, that it's true art, that it's crafted at its highest level. I mean, everything, I became obsessed with it, like the fact that he, you know, he developed materials with NASA ahead of Armstrong stepping on the moon and Armstrong himself saying, I felt like I'd kind of been there before having watched 2001 Space Odyssey. You know, the whole thing of that aspect of it, Doug Trumbull's camera work, all of it, the set designs. But at its heart, just quite how extraordinarily philosophically impactful it is to sort of talk about humankind, I guess in a slightly... in a very pessimistic way to a degree, but with hope of change, that we've only evolved our weapons and our ability to throw junk further into space, basically. Trash. It's quite a pessimistic worldview, but then at the end there is this hope that alien intelligence will help us make an evolutionary step towards a new consciousness. That's kind of profoundly, extraordinarily hopeful. And echoed in Denis Villeneuve's Arrival, which was another film that just had such emotional beauty as well as conceptual beauty and craft in it. Acting, schmacting, whacting. So many films. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The Shining again for Jack. I mean, I think Jack did Chinatown. Jesus, what a film. And I would say 5 Easy Pieces as well. I mean, this is all Jack Nicholson as well. But he had a huge influence on me.
So we got to get you to work with Jack then. Is that
what you're saying? Jack.
We'll get him out of retirement. It'll work. No,
a couple more. I'd say, you mean,
no,
okay, let me think. Dog Day Afternoon. I mean, really, that amazing period of the
70s,
when the East Coast Boys came over and took the studio system to town and created really character-driven, esoteric work, blew studio budgets apart with things like Apocalypse Now. The Cimino film that was, what was it called? I can't remember now. But just, you know. And, yeah, I was very lucky growing up. I didn't watch a huge amount, but it all had a massive impact. But, I mean, you know, as far as the stuff that I was allowed to watch and culturally into, I grew up in a great era of cinema. The 80s was fantastic. The 90s and 80s was just great. And whether it was Back to the Future and Ghostbusters and the Indiana Jones films and the Star Wars films, all of that was just, there was great work at every level in that, even though it was pop culture and entertainment.
Doesn't matter, it's great.
No, great stuff. You know?
Listen, thank you for taking the time with me. I'll talk to you all day. The last thing I just have to tell you, I promised, social media is a terrible place, typically. However, however, I have said this publicly and I told them I would tell you this if I ever got to interview you.
Okay.
Your fan base, and they're called many different things,
yes, I know,
are by far the best fan base. They're not as toxic. When they hear of you and they're just a very nice group of they adore you in a way. I don't think I love my children as much as they love you, but they are a very good group and you have a very good loyal fan base. I had to tell you that.
Well, that's them, but it makes me very proud. Is it like a parent?
You raised them well.
I raised them well. I've taught them well. Given them everything I've got, and it's turned out nicely. My children are doing well. No, seriously, that's really heartwarming to hear, because it's, I know what you mean, it can be an incredibly toxic place. I mean, I'm not on it, and part of me would like to just disguise myself and go, I haven't even got a fake Instagram account, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I took myself off Facebook years and years ago, I mean, well before this happened, do you know what I mean? And it looks like a lot of work and a lot of anxiety, and I understand at the same time you get great rewards out of it. There's huge amounts of communication and sharing, and I'm not aloneness, and just like you can bring a lot of support into your life and realize who you are and find your voice and your purpose, and that's great. It's great. Everyone can have a platform. This is fantastic. I also know that I'd be pretty terrible if I had any more of a platform than I already got. I'm quite busy.
You're doing well. So I think you're okay.
I think I'm fine. Yeah.
But thank you, Benedict.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you more.
That's actor and producer Benedict Cumberbatch. The Courier is now available to rent and purchase on Blu-ray DVD. The Power of the Dog opens in theaters on November 17th before streaming on Netflix November 24th. The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne opens in limited release on October 22nd before streaming on Amazon Prime on November 5th. Spider-Man No Way Home will be released in theaters on December 17th. And Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is currently scheduled for March 25th, 2022. And that's it for this bonus edition of Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Drew Griffith edited this episode and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tankay, Janelle Riley, and Michael Schneider, I'm Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.